the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The news out of California has been interesting this week. It's been overshadowed perhaps by events, of course, on the Gulf Coast and the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, but it's still big news, and it ought to have our attention and our interest. Because after all, in California, in this past week, we saw a state legislature defy a clear precedent and vote of the people of their own state and pass legislation that would have authorized and legalized same-sex marriage, that in the state of California. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has pledged to veto the bill, and the aftermath and controversy of his veto is what we're going to be talking about today, because in the media, what we're hearing is a chorus saying that Governor Schwarzenegger just doesn't get it, some accusing him of political cowardice, but others just going on to argue that it really doesn't matter, because in the long run, maybe even in the short run, gay marriage is just going to happen. That's the argument that's being made. History is on their side, they're arguing, those who are the proponents of same-sex marriage, and very little can be done to keep it from happening. Some state legislatures, some constitutional amendments, some governors and some courts may try to slow it down, but it's going to happen. I want to know if you think that's right. I want to know how you sense the situation, what your own cultural analysis is right now. I want to know where you think we stand, and I'm going to put some things out just to give us some talking points about how to think about it. First, a review of issues in the news. Big news out of the United Kingdom, where researchers at the university in Newcastle, not previously known for breaking all kinds of new scientific developments, has just been granted permission from the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority to create a human embryo out of one male cell and two female cells. That is one sperm cell and two egg cells. Now, there's an interesting background to this. There is a lot of controversy in the UK over this, but here's what's going on. These researchers at Newcastle University plan to create these new embryos and to take out the mitochondrial content out of one of the embryos in order to see if this would allow the treatment of mitochondrial diseases. Now, these are genetic diseases that are passed down through the mother because of the mitochondrial content that is in the wall of the egg. So basically, you can think of it this way, just to make the whole thing simple. You have a woman's egg. All the genetic material is taken out of the egg except for the case itself. That genetic material is put inside another egg from which its own contents have been removed. And then the sperm cell is brought in to fertilize it, and thus you have one father but two mothers. One mother giving the egg case and the other mother giving the egg's genetic content. Now, there is a lot of controversy on this because in Britain, this Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority has a great deal of authority indeed, a great deal of influence. And just in recent weeks, I've been blogging about this, they've been asking for public input into to new policies to be adopted by the British government and the HFEA concerning embryonic research, stem cell research, such things as in vitro fertilization, artificial insemination, all this they say is on the table. Now, right now, the law in Great Britain prevents any kind of embryonic research that changes the genetic character or the genetic structure of the embryo. Now, that's what makes this really interesting, folks, because here's the take home. There are laws, there are policies, there are guidelines and research boundaries that are put into place, but they're only so good as the determination of the people who watch them to enforce them. In Britain, the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority is given the assignment to make certain that these things don't happen. Now, here's the key thing. If the law says that embryonic research cannot be authorized that changes the genetic structure of the embryo, and here you're talking about this kind of research that actually uses two different eggs from two different women, how could it do anything but change the genetic structure of the embryo? The agency's own news release is very ambiguous. It said this: expert views were also given on the meaning of the phrase genetic structure in relation to the proposed research, and the committee heard that this phrase has no precise scientific meaning. All right, folks, we're right back where we are when you have jurists The justices of the U.S. Supreme Court finding rights that aren't in the Constitution, but saying they're in there, in a penumbra. They're in there in a larger sense. It's invisible. They're not in the words, but they're in there in the meaning. That's what's going on here. Now you have this authority, this agency in Great Britain that is charged to protect the integrity of research that says we are prevented from allowing any research that changes the genetic structure of the embryo, but this phrase has no precise scientific meaning. That is a cop-out of the first degree. And this just reminds us again that a firewall is only as good as our determination to hold it. And what we have in this whole field of biomedical ethics and biotechnology is a creeping towards having no rules at all. And there are calls virtually for that here in the United States of America. There are calls for it in Great Britain and in Europe. But let's face it, folks, we're looking here at a redefinition of what it means to be human. We are looking at artificial technologies being pressed to the limits. And this should scare all of us. It's the brave new world of designer babies. And I want to tell you, that's what's going to come out of this. Because if you can use this particular procedure in order to supposedly treat mitochondrial diseases, and we all would want those diseases to be eradicated, but not just at any cost. But the same technology can be used in order to change other genetic content, and there's no reason why that genetic content could not be exchanged if we're using this process with two different eggs in order to say, I want a baby with this color hair. I want a baby with this color eyes. I want a baby with this aptitude. I want a baby of this height. You know, I think when we are talking about designer babies, a lot of people think we're talking about some kind of technology way out there in the future, science fiction, not in our lifetimes. I have to tell you, it's right around the corner. And until and unless we think this through very carefully, we're going to face it right here in this country as well. Historian Timothy Garton Ash, writing in The Guardian, a London newspaper, coined a new word that I think is interesting for us. Looking at what happened in New Orleans in terms of the breakdown of social order, he calls it de-civilization. Now, I don't think you're going to find that in a dictionary, but I think it's a good thing he used the word just that way. Even if he coined it, congratulations to Timothy Garton Ash. Because I think what we are seeing is exactly what he's suggesting, and that is when the structure of law is removed and there is no adequate structure of restraint, what we see is civilization come apart. De-civilization. Some people, he says, some of the time behave with a heroic solidarity. Most people, most of the time, engage in a ruthless fight for individual and genetic survival. That's a very bleak view of humankind, coming from Timothy Garton Ash. And I don't agree with his basically pessimistic secular viewpoint. I come at it from a biblical viewpoint that understands that human beings are sinners, but also understands that God does give us that restraining grace so that we do not do what we otherwise might do. But I think his concept of decivilization is useful, and I think as we look back over the previous week, we're going to see that there was a lot of decivilizing going on. There was a decivilizing process that was on the streets and in the Superdome of New Orleans. And if it could happen there, it could happen elsewhere as well. In New York last night, a couple of Anglican bishops were honored. It's a very interesting process, seeing what's going on in the Anglican Communion and debates over homosexuality and human sexuality in general. But the Kairos Journal, a journal for pastors defending biblical orthodoxy based in New York City, held a dinner last night and presented awards to Nigerian Archbishop Peter Akinola and Ugandan Archbishop Henry Luke Orumbi, the two African bishops, archbishops in these cases, stand stalwartly against the acceptance of homosexuality. They see this, as I see it, and as I hope you would see it, as a vital test case in terms of biblical authority. They would see any endorsement of homosexuality, any acceptance of gay bishops or of homosexual priests or of homosexual marriage, they would see these as gross violations of biblical authority. They were honored by the magazine, but you can imagine that they weren't so honored by some of the Anglicans and Episcopalians who want to see the church go into a different direction. When the visiting archbishops were asked if they would be meeting with presiding Bishop Frank Griswold, head of the Episcopal Church USA, they chuckled. The Kairos Journal presented them awards for, quote, their bold and consistent stand against the decisions made by United States and Canadian churches. It is encouraging to remember that in 1998, 82% of the world's Anglican bishops opposed homosexual relationships on biblical grounds. I hope those numbers would still hold. But in reality, what took place in New York last night was good and proper, and it was a great thing to have two African Anglican archbishops honored in the United States of America, in the capital city of American culture in so many ways, in Manhattan. What we need is for some evangelism from Africa. What we need is a transplant of the kind of biblical clarity found in Archbishops Akinola and Arambi in not only the Episcopal Church USA, but any number of denominations in this country. Folks, we're living in interesting times, and when archbishops from Africa come to give a brave witness on behalf of the gospel in the middle of Manhattan, it tells us that God's up to something very interesting in our times. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. Hello, folks. Those who are pressing for same-sex marriage, especially right now in the state of California, they are convinced that time is on their side. And the same thing's basically true nationwide. Coast to coast, those who are the proponents of changing marriage as from an institution that is the union of a man and a woman to an institution that could be a man and a man or a woman and a woman, those who are pressing for such a fundamental redefinition of marriage, which I believe is indeed the destruction of marriage itself, they are now saying that, they're very confident the time is on their side. And let me tell you what they're pointing to. They're pointing to development showing momentum for their position. They're really not very deterred by the fact that you have all these state constitutional amendments being passed and you have surveys showing that a majority of Americans are opposed to same-sex marriage. What encourages them are the demographics. They point to the younger people, younger citizens, and of course that means younger voters, and they say, look, these folks are increasingly, as you go younger, supportive of gay marriage. Time's on our side. All we have to do is wait for this to take place, for these folks to get in place, and we're going to be fine. In California this past week, you had the California Senate first and then the General Assembly pass legislation that would have legalized same-sex marriage. In the General Assembly, it was by one vote. And thus, the issue goes to the governor of California. There was some question as to whether Arnold Schwarzenegger would veto it or not. After all, let's remind ourselves, Governor Schwarzenegger is not a social conservative. He's more of a social moderate or liberal. He also has a political philosophy that is more libertarian than conservative. He's pro-choice on abortion, and he's basically for gay rights. I mean, those are just the bald, plain facts in this situation. But Governor Schwarzenegger's office has announced that he will veto the bill. Margarita Thompson, the spokesperson for the governor's office, said, "We cannot have a system where the people vote and the legislature derails that vote. Out of respect for the will of the people, the governor will veto the bill." Now, what she's talking about there is that just 5 years ago, in the year 2000, the people of California adopted a referendum. That is a measure which the entire population had the opportunity to vote on, in which they said that in California, marriage shall be the union of a man and a woman, period. Now, what's interesting is that proponents of this legislation coming just 5 years later are saying that that referendum meant merely that California would not recognize gay marriages done outside the state. Now, how do you like that for logic? And so, led by Assemblyman Mark Leno, at least in the General Assembly, they pressed the issue through and they got it by a one-vote margin. Now, earlier this week, I went back to Representative Leno's statement. The Assemblyman said this. He said, quote, "I believe this is a governor who at his core is a libertarian on issues of social matters and that he is very fair-minded. I think he also takes the longer rather than the shorter view of history." That's the line of our interest right there. What the Assemblyman was saying, and he is openly homosexual himself, and he is the major proponent for same-sex marriage, he's driving the issue in the General Assembly. What he says is that the governor should take a long view of history, the longer rather than the shorter view of history. What they're really saying there, well, it's that history's on their side, that the momentum is building, and especially as they look at the demographics and they look at the pace of social change and transformation on this issue, they say that's where they're going. Well, we need to get a picture of what exactly is going on there in California, and I really appreciate on short order Jordan Lawrence of the Alliance Defense Fund, an attorney with the ADF, coming on with us today. Jordan, it's good to have you.
It's always good to be on your show.
Well, thank you. I hope you can make some sense out of this for us, Mr. Lawrence, because I want to know how in the world the California General Assembly could act in such a way to defy the will of the people just 5 years ago expressed through a statewide vote.
Well, they legally cannot, but I think that you touched upon this on your remarks just before I came on. they believe that they have a righteous cause, that they're on the cutting edge of history, and that they're smarter than the ignorant voters who voted. So therefore, they're allowed to break the rules in California, as you know. An initiative passed by the voters can only be repealed by another initiative, because the whole point of the initiative process was to bypass the legislature, which might be held captive to special interest and not pass a specific bill that the people want. That's the whole point of the initiative process. If the legislature can repeal an initiative, the initiative process is useless.
Well, absolutely, and this is, insults the people, so far as I'm concerned. It also raises, at least for me, some constitutional issues, but you're the lawyer here. Could they have gotten away with it if the governor had signed the bill?
No, I don't think they could have, and the Alliance Defense Fund would have immediately filed a lawsuit on that legal basis that you can't repeal an initiative with an act of the legislature. And that was the reason why Governor Schwarzenegger announced that he would veto it. Now, that's somewhat technical, and it's a nice, convenient, but appropriate reason to veto the bill. And I think a judges would have struck it down. If this is so popular or so needed or whatever, it needs to be done by an initiative, not by by a legislative act.
Well, I'm with you on that, and I agree that this is only a very small firewall because, after all, Governor Schwarzenegger, even in making his comments through a spokesperson yesterday, really bragged about California's domestic partnership rights and all the rest. And, Mr. Lawrence, he almost seemed to be asking the court to take the question.
Well, yes, and now this is interesting, because even if a court strikes down the marriage laws or strikes down this Proposition 22 that defines marriage, there is another initiative in the works to amend not the state statutes but the state constitution to define marriage as a man and a woman, as 17 other states have done in the last few years. The initiative process is going to, I think, in some ways, provide the avenue for the voters of California to impose and underscore emphatically what they did back in 2000 and say marriage is a man and a woman, and legislature, you've got to obey that, and not no more monkey business with this stuff.
Mr. Lawrence, let me ask you another question, and I'm so glad you're an attorney to answer this question. I am absolutely, perplexed. I guess that's the best way I can put it. When I read a statement made by supposedly intelligent people arguing that the Proposition 22 that passed overwhelmingly by the people of California actually doesn't ban same-sex marriage performed in California, but only the recognition of same-sex marriages performed elsewhere. Can you make any sense out of that for me?
No, and this is, and in fact, in one way, you may be able to speak to this better. This is the Pharisees visiting California state statutes. It's a legalistic, technical, and preposterous explanation to get around the clear spirit, import, intent, everything of Proposition 22 that was passed in 2000. They're trying to make null and void by making it sound like all of the campaign fight back in 2000 was over this little thing to stop out-of-state same-sex marriages, and the opponents were singing a very different tune back then about how horrible this was. Not that, oh, this is no big deal, this is just a little bitty law. They have to say that to rationalize their clear and brazen defiance of the will of the people expressed through this initiative. They would be basically admitting that they were lawless and breaking the law and violating the state constitution if they said we're in clear conflict. So they have to kind of make up this distinction, which I think is just ridiculous.
Well, I'm with you on that. I have to ask you the big question, though, of the day, Mr. Lawrence. You know, the argument being made by the proponents of same-sex marriage right in the face of the governor's promised veto is that time's on their side. You and the ADF have done just fantastic work in defending marriage, and I know you stand with us in calling for a federal marriage amendment. Are they right? Are we out of time, or is there still time for us to act?
Same-sex marriage is not inevitable because God created it, and I think he's got more invested than we do in making sure it stays in place.
Jordan Lawrence of the Alliance Defense Fund, attorney there in California, it's been great to have you here on the program.
Thank you.
It's time for you to tell us what you think. 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, it's been an interesting week, and this particular issue coming out of California is instructive to the entire nation. We need to watch what goes on. Not only is California our most populous state, but it's the state where a whole lot of our culture really originates in terms of entertainment, movies, television. It's where the creative class tends to be very concentrated. If you take Manhattan and Los Angeles Basin and put them together, you've got at least the majority of the culture-producing institutions in America when it comes to entertainment. And, of course, California tends to start trends that this spread across the country. That was true with the tax-cutting trend back in the 1970s and the 80s, and it's certainly true now. We need to watch this very, very carefully. I want to tell you something of the logic that's going on in this story. The Advocate, which is the nation's most influential homosexual magazine, cites Jeffrey Kors, executive director of Equality California, saying this: for the first time in our nation's history, the people's elected representatives have taken a stand to protect all families and to ensure equality for all. We're counting on Governor Schwarzenegger to lift the burden of discrimination from hundreds of thousands of California families by becoming the first governor in the nation to sign legislation ending discrimination against same-sex couples obtaining a civil marriage license. His legacy will in large part be based on whether he signs or vetoes this historic civil rights legislation. Now, all I agree with in what Mr. Kors had to say are those last words. And I fundamentally 150% agree with everything he had to say in those last words. I repeat, Governor Schwarzenegger's legacy will in large part be based on whether he signs or vetoes this historic civil rights legislation. The difference is Mr. Kors wanted him to sign it, and I certainly wanted him to veto it. But when he did veto it, what happened? The New York Times editorial that ran just today, "Where's the Governator Now?" The New York Times doesn't like his veto one bit. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger was a profile in timidity this week when he vowed to veto a pioneering bill authorizing gay marriage in California. Too bad Mr. Schwarzenegger could not find the courage to sign the bill into law. He says the editors say he relies on a fig leaf. 5 years ago, Californians voted overwhelmingly for a ballot measure that recognized only heterosexual marriages as valid. That ignores the fact that 5 years is an eternity in the fast-moving arena of gay rights. There's the argument right there. 5 years is an eternity, say the New York Times editors, in the fast-moving arena of gay rights. Now, that alone would make this topic and subject worth talking about, but at the libertarian website, Tech Central Station, obviously, We've talked about this website before. It is often where you'll find conservative arguments about domestic policy issues, but it's not really conservative. It's libertarian. And you see the evidence of that in this article by Ryan Sager, "Arnold Schwarzenegger Gay Hater?" He goes on to say that the governor obviously should not have vetoed this bill. I want you to listen to his argument. He says, "Yet it's crystal clear where public opinion is headed, both in California and nationwide. The younger the demographic polled, the more support is found for gay marriage and civil unions. Really, what gay marriage opponents are looking to do is write anti-gay provisions into as many state constitutions as possible, and maybe even into the federal constitution, before the people invested in the so-called defense of marriage all die off." Folks, here's the question. Do you believe that it's just going to happen? That gay marriage is just going to happen? It's like a steamroller from history that's coming behind us, and it's just going to roll over everything in its path, and before long, it doesn't matter about Proposition 22 in California, it won't matter about constitutional amendments in your state, it won't matter about efforts to pass a federal marriage amendment for the U.S. Constitution. It's simply going to happen. That's the logic that the homosexual activists are using, and I can tell you that at least in some quarters, it is a compelling logic. There are some people who hear that and say, you know, that's absolutely right. I want to be on the right side of history. I want to know what you think about this. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Are we simply wasting our time trying to defend marriage as a heterosexual institution? Are we fighting a losing battle? Is the battle already lost? The number 877-893-8255, that's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's pledge to veto the legislation adopted by both chambers of the California legislature that would authorize same-sex marriage. That's how close we came just this week. While the nation's attention was diverted, rightly so, to the emergency in the Gulf Coast region, while other issues were swirling in the news, the death of the nation's Chief Justice and his funeral, the nomination of Judge John Roberts to be the new Chief Justice of the United States, all these things took place, and off the radar screen of most Americans, there was a moral hurricane in the making. It was a close call. Governor Schwarzenegger, even as he vetoed the legislation, bragged about his state's domestic partnership laws. There are those who say that's just further evidence of the fact that those who want to define marriage as a heterosexual institution are on the losing side of history. I want to know what you think, and we'll be right back with your calls. Folks, we are assigned as Christians the task of thinking seriously about these matters, watching what's going on in the culture around us, and trying to understand the signs of the times. And the signs of these times are rather ominous when it comes to the institution of marriage. Those who on the side of proponents of same-sex marriage say, look, all you have to do is look at the demographics. The younger people are, the more likely they are to support same-sex marriage. That is an issue of genuine concern. I'll tell you right up front, I am very much concerned about that. And if something doesn't happen in terms of a moral recovery, in terms of teaching about the institution of marriage and recovering an objective understanding of marriage as a heterosexual institution, then I think we are in big trouble. But I want to know what you think. The phone number 877-893-8255. We're going to go to Youngstown, Ohio, where Elaine's on the line. She's listening on WHKW. Elaine, welcome.
Hi, Reverend Moeller. I just wanted to say that the greater loss would be to not fight the battle at all than to fight the battle and lose. With Arnold Schwarzenegger, I disagree with what that man said. It took more courage for him to veto that bill than it did to approve it, especially
yeah,
in the climate
yeah.
of California.
Yeah, Elaine, I'm thankful you made that point and that you made it from Youngstown, Ohio. Yes, California, it is a state where it takes an awful lot of political courage to veto a bill like this, and I'm glad he did. I'm really glad he did because Governor Schwarzenegger has not really been concerned too much about what conservative Christians think about such things, and I think the fallout from failing to veto this would not have been so great for him, but he is vetoing the bill, and I appreciate the fact that even though he said he's doing it on pretty narrow constitutional grounds rather than larger grounds about marriage, I'm going to take this veto as a victory, and I'm going to stand with you on that, Elaine. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Don, calling from Union, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Don, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
If we sit down, we roll over, and we play dead, then, yeah, that steamroller is going to roll right over us. We have to stand up and fight the fight, and whether it be on constitutional grounds or moral decision, Governor Schwarzenegger did the right thing. The people spoke years ago, and those are the people that put him in office, and he has a duty to them.
Well, you know, Don, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Hang with me here for a minute. What would you say? I mean, I'm just trying to picture this. You're in Kentucky, where I am as well. And, you know, here in this state, we passed overwhelmingly a constitutional amendment to make clear that marriage is a heterosexual institution, the union of a man and a woman in this state. You know, what would it say to you if your elected representatives just moved very shortly after an act like that to defy the will of the people? What would that tell you here in Kentucky, Don?
That our morals are changing and we need to vote those individuals out of office.
Well, it's that last point I hope people in California are hearing. We need to hold our elected officials accountable. And, you know, if I were in California and my representatives and senators there in the state legislature voted so arrogantly to defy the will of the people, well, I just couldn't wait to get to the next election to make that the big issue, and I hope it becomes a major issue there in California. Thanks so much for your call, Don. We're going to go to Laramie, Wyoming, where Howard's listening on XM Satellite Radio. Welcome, Howard.
Yes, in answer to your question, yes and no, we are fighting a losing battle. I look at it in history. Every great civilization that has failed started with the decline of the morals. This country, the greatest civilization ever on the face of this planet, if the people choose to to lose the civilization, we will be fighting a losing battle. If they choose to keep the civilization great, we will gain our morals back. Even our founding fathers said once we lose our morals, this country will fail. And I am very proud of Governor Schwarzenegger for vetoing that.
Okay, Howard, thanks so much for making that point. Appreciate your call all the way from Wyoming. That's a fascinating part of this discussion. I mean, right now you look at a moral context and you realize that this is not a standalone issue. That's one of the major principles of the Christian worldview. All of these issues are related to each other. And Howard's right. If we lose this one, there's a whole lot going with it concerning marriage and sexuality and what it means to be human and all the rest. Appreciate that call. We're going to go to Lee calling from Brandenburg, Kentucky. Go right ahead, Lee.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I'm glad to talk to you. I think, you know, a lot of this that you're talking about, especially with the younger generation, is due to the desensitization of it, you know, where they see it on TV all the time. We didn't have that when we were growing up. And, you know, as conservative Christians, you know, that's probably why we are, that the younger generations aren't.
Yeah, Lee, I think you're onto something in terms of the larger culture and what is observed. And I think there really is a desensitizing of an entire generation. What you have is a new normal. I mean, that's really what this is about, isn't it? It's creating a new normal so that when kids grow up, they see what they observe around them and they just assume that it's normal. And that's why I think you have in the entertainment industry, Hollywood, the movies and all the rest, you have these themes, and it's not just about homosexuality. It's not. It's about other issues as well. It's about just subverting marriage. I mean, first of all, just look at all the cohabitation that you see in the entertainment. Just look at all the premarital sex, and worse. You just have to wonder what's coming next. And, you know, when you think about what our kids are seeing, that's at least half the problem. But the other half is what they don't know. And you see, that's where we have to take responsibility. We can blame Hollywood and we can blame the entertainment industry for sending all the wrong signals. But we can only blame ourselves as parents if we're not teaching our own children from the Word of God how we ought to think about these things. That's our fault. We can only blame our own churches if from the pulpits of our churches we're not hearing a consistent, authoritative, biblical message to hold up the priority of marriage as the display of God's glory in the midst of creation, as the union of a man and a woman for life. We have to blame ourselves in large part for this, for what we have failed to do, to teach our children to honor marriage, to defend and protect marriage, not only against its redefinition as same-sex marriage, but also, quite frankly and honestly, against the onslaught of divorce and other issues that have also undermined marriage. We have to take responsibility to say, wake up call, though it may be, we've got to hear what went on in California, a near miss on the same-sex marriage issue. We have to watch what's going on in Massachusetts, not a miss at all. It's gay marriage there. Similar things with domestic partnerships and civil unions in other states. It's not enough to watch this, is it? I mean, it's not enough to be informed. It's necessary to be informed and invested in an issue like this so that we do what we can do. And one of the concrete things we can do is to call for a federal marriage amendment to support the FMA that has been proposed, and to call upon our congressmen and senators to get off the lethargy and move on the federal marriage amendment while there is still time. There's a ticking clock, and we're running out of time. I'll be right back with some final thoughts. I'm Albert Mohler. Folks, we're headed into the weekend, and who knows what we're going to face. Just last weekend, we went from the hurricane right into the death of Chief Justice William Rehnquist, and it seems like we are continually faced with an avalanche, a barrage of news developments, and almost all of these news stories have a Christian worldview dimension to them. Somehow, they impact the way Christians should think. They provide a catalyst for Christians thinking through the issues that are really important to us. And so we've got to be nimble on our feet. We have to be active. We have to be reading. We have to be intellectually engaged. And we have to be observant. But beyond that, we also need to be able to give an answer. We need to be able to talk to our neighbors, our friends, our fellow church members, our children and family members about why we as Christians think in certain ways in order to be faithful to Scripture. One of the big issues that is likely to be discussed over this weekend is the proper role of government, or at least I hope it's discussed, in all the political recriminations and all the investigations and the charges made on all sides concerning the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. One of the honest and legitimate questions to be asked out of this is, what should government do? On the one side, you have people who basically don't want much government at all, and I mean just as little as possible. And an event like this does remind us that the protection of the Commonwealth does require some structure. It does require some infrastructure. It requires some investment. It requires some organization and even bureaucracy. But on the other side, you hear some conversation as if the government should have been able to have prevented this hurricane, as if government has some kind of power actually almost to intervene in nature, and there are people who think the government should solve all of our problems. You see, I don't think the government is irrelevant to the rebuilding of the Gulf Coast. I just don't think the government's going to do it. I think it's going to have to be local people. It's going to have to be human beings invested in the communities who are going to take action. I think the failure that we saw in the center of New Orleans wasn't a federal failure, even though the federal government may not have responded as it should have. We'll be knowing a whole lot more about that in days to come. It was a local disaster, first and foremost, and I'm not even just talking politically. I'm talking morally. It was a disaster that people in New Orleans abandoned the poor right in their midst. It was a disaster that there was so little commitment to the common good and so little commitment to love of neighbor that there were people who were perfectly willing to leave the underclass, the poor, those who could not take care of themselves, those without cars and without options, behind. You know, the rebuilding of New Orleans or the rebuilding of the hurricane-devastated areas is a daunting challenge, just thinking of the buildings. But rebuilding a civic structure, that's a much larger challenge than rebuilding homes, businesses, shopping centers, and schools. It's what the people build in terms of their own investment in the community. And that's rooted in what they expect of government. Next week, we're going to be talking about that and other issues. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. God bless you over the weekend. We'll see you next week. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.